and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor is Pape Machinery this hour. And Pape Machinery is our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. And they are located up on 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Go up and see them if you need a tractor or a mower or steel products. They're also a Honda dealer. They have a few more generators left. If you need a generator, you better grab one because they are going to be tough to find in California. So go up and see them or give them a call. Phone number is 530-226-9226. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Today is June 19th, 2022. We are 1 hour into the hidden war with Lieutenant John Norris. And I don't know how many people still, you know, spend much time out in our public lands. I mean, way out. Not just, you know, on some little trail. But so you're thinking, well, maybe, you know, I don't hunt, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to come across these cartel grower guys. But, you know, you guys had in one video, you had one video where you said it was like a half a mile, or it was really short, next to a place where you had a whole bunch of kids. Kids were doing a camp,
right,
or something.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we've had some of these grows. I mean, yeah, some of them are 8 miles, you know, into wilderness areas, way into the national forests or national parks, but. But, guys, we've had them 400 yards from a $5 million affluent tech capital home in the Silicon Valley, in the Silicon Valley foothills, just down in a canyon that happens to be public land like Mid-Peninsula Open Space or a county park, and literally armed gunmen running around, growing this stuff, harvesting it, sneaking stuff out at night, and they are a stone's throw from somebody's community. The Hidden Villa Science Camp, and again, I'm going to go back to one of the last chapters in Hidden War on the gunfight we had up on Sierra Azul in Santa Cruz County. A third of that grow site, and this wasn't an overly aggressive cartel group. We think they were the same faction that had been involved in shooting my partner back in 2005 because of the location, but they had just pushed over to Santa Cruz County after Prop 64 passed because they knew there was little to no enforcement on trespass outdoor cartel stuff. So they just moved over the hill where they would be a lot safer. Those growers certainly knew that if you did that in Santa Clara County, the sheriff's office was very aggressive. You might end up shot or dog bit if you pulled a gun on us. And certainly Fish and Wildlife teams were in the same boat. But so we're over in Santa Cruz County, and one-third of the property that this grow site was on was called Camp Loma. It was a children's science and outdoor education camp for summertime. And by the good graces, they had not had interaction with these kids. And in fact, when we did the raid, I don't think there was anybody on the camp, but we were blown away to see such an aggressive grow site full of armed gunmen, you know, looking down at the headwaters of Soquel Creek into the ocean for migratory steelhead trout. So we had that issue on the poison waterway side, and then we had Demonstration Forest, which is one of the top 10 mountain biking areas in the country, not just in California or on the coast, and then for it to be on this outdoor education camp as well. It was a powder keg of a disaster for outdoor legitimate Americans recreating in their great outdoors on the Central Coast. And little did they know, they had this train wreck going on literally next to them. So it can be in your backyard, literally. That's not an exaggeration. We've had them close. We've had them far. And in areas like the Silicon Valley where you don't think of that type of crime happening, one of the, I guess, positives of finding that problem in my hometown and starting to work on it as a specialty with the sheriff's office is to show that it can be anywhere. It isn't in, quote-unquote, a dirty neighborhood. It's not in some, you know, remote Wild West county like Siskiyou County where you're just out there and there's not going to be a lot of response. We have a lot of good resources in the Silicon Valley, and we were doing 25 grows a year, all cartel outdoor trespass grows, you know, during the peak of it. And now that indoor problem certainly continued. So to your point, yes, this can be right under your noses to middle America, anywhere you go, as well as those really hardcore adventurers, hunters, anglers, backpackers that would really go back into what we have in this great state for pristine areas where they might run across. across it.
Well, and like we talk to people, you know, tell people all the time, these guys aren't teleporting to these sites. You know,
we
don't have that yet. So they are like, you know, Bill and I headed to Susanville to pick up lamb at the butcher, and here's a, you know, a U-Haul dragon anchor with a couple of minivans full of giant, scary Mexican guys.
Yeah, one in the front, one in the back.
One in front, one in back, hauling the dope, you know?
Yep.
And so these guys, if they're in there, they're hauling in chemicals. They are hauling out, or they're living in there. But they're getting there somehow. Yeah. They're going through your neighborhood. They're going through your town.
Well, you look at some of the pictures in the book, and the first thing that it kind of struck me was they have to haul all that stuff in there. I mean, I'm talking propane tanks. I mean, everything comes in a backpack, the level of material that they have. Obviously, they've been there for a while because it's mind blowing how much stuff they packed in to run these big grows.
Yeah, and it never ceases to amaze me how hard these guys work to get that infrastructure in, how many loads, how heavy those loads are, how far they have to hike some of those loads, and they're doing it without getting caught. And in both books, I talk about how hard it is to catch some of these guys because, you know, when you look at a tactical unit like Matt and those of us that are snipers and do camouflage and some of us hunt and fish and, you know, being sneaky and being able to hide in plain sight is not an easy thing, even in the woods. And these guys are very good at it. And we got to give due respect to what we're up against as an enemy because they're using the same camouflage paints we are to, you know, camouflage their encampments and their tarps and their gear, their water lines and burying them well underground so you don't see these polypropylene lines diverting water sometimes as far as a mile, and you'd never know you're walking over that from one part to the next.
Yeah, so, and these water ponds and the water storage.
The
I mean, you could walk
pits.
Right. You could walk right by it and not even know it's there. The way they cover them up, and it's pretty amazing. Another thing I wanted you to talk about a little bit was, you know, we see you guys out in these videos out there in camo gear and sniper rifles and all this stuff. It's like, wow, are these guys really trained to have that kind of stuff? And I was pretty surprised at the level of training. Talk about that a little bit, about what you guys go through, because really it looked like SEAL team training to me, packing logs, and I mean it mm-hmm. wasn't an easy thing. Yeah,
well, one of the things that, and this goes back to kind of a personal and professional journey before Matt, when I started in Santa Clara County, in the early days, game wardens were really respected for doing what people thought game wardens were supposed to do. We were supposed to be the bird and the bunny cops doing the hunting and fishing stuff, weren't supposed to be doing felony takedowns or doing quote-unquote real law enforcement work, when unfortunately we're sworn and trained to do all that stuff like any police officer does. Yet we specialize in wildlife enforcement, so our academy goes through the same post requirements, the same training that California Highway Patrol, that San Jose Police Department are going to get. And then we have another 6 weeks to 2 months of training just on wildlife forensics and wildlife ID. And, you know, we actually teach a class called Tactical Surveillance that I started for our academy cadets way back in the day on how to camouflage, how to put on a ghillie suit, how to make observations and do the camo and stealth like sniper slash special forces stuff, because game wardens have to do that sometimes to make observations way back in the bush on a hardcore deer poacher, somebody baiting animals, commercial wildlife stuff, and not to mention the cartel threat. So it was kind of a pride piece for me to show the legitimacy and professionalism of game wardens from day one before I ever got into the special operations realm. And something I noticed from my mentors and the gurus I trained under the academy is, just like you said, Doug, we are very well trained. We take our jobs very seriously, and our standards are incredibly high. And when we formed up MET, I was able to handpick the right people that not only were, you know, had some special operations background, either in the military or interest working with allied agency law enforcement guys, but they were really good game wardens. all of them were, you know, the one percenters of doing the traditional career. But to have a 20-year veteran of the SEAL teams, 9 years active as a sniper, who had just come back to join our agency after retiring from Department of Justice, and bring him in, there you go. And then knowing that I was already a trained sniper, I was a sniper instructor with Santa Clara County Sheriffs, had been for many years, even though we didn't have our own sniper team, I was certified in all of that, and there were four or five other game wardens that behind the scenes for 10 to 15 years, especially post 9/11, we knew a team like this was going to be very helpful, if not necessary, for the state of California's game wardens because of what was changing demographically with the geopolitical climate. Domestic terrorism threats, active shooter school shootings, all of those things where all of us as law enforcement get called to the crisis, and we better be trained, we better be ready, we better have the equipment and the tools and the mindset to deploy and act effectively with our brothers in blue. And that's kind of the direction we were going well before MET was formed. So when I was able to get, when we were able to put this whole thing together, we had all the building blocks in place, and it was a seamless transition. So all the training you're seeing in the video, which is taken from a 26-minute documentary by American Zealot Productions. They did it for NRA and Outdoor TV called Patriot Profiles Life of Duty. That is how we train when we're together. We make sure physical training is to the top, you know, top notch. And when you have a SEAL team veteran running PT,
yeah.
Frog, as he's codenamed in Hidden War, that's the type of training we want to do. And then, of course, you know, you got to stay physically fit on your own, just like all of the MET cops, even outside of Fish and Wildlife. And you guys know, and Aaron, you've seen it, the areas we work in,
yeah.
And the heat of the time of year, carrying a plate carrier and 60 pounds of gear and a battle rifle and pushing a canine, they are not easy days.
Well, and it's not like you're marching through the forest on a path. I mean, a lot of this is crawling on your
blazing trail.
You know, you're literally hacking your way through. But I thought it was interesting in the one video, you guys were like snipping the bushes, you know, to try to like make a way through the thicket so that they didn't obviously hear you coming like a giant elephant coming through the bushes. So you guys really have to go to great lengths in some cases to creep up on these guys. And, you know, the one thing we kind of neglected to mention in the first hour, but for people who don't necessarily follow this topic, you know, I may still have somebody out there thinking, but it's legal now. Okay, so that is part of the problem, because 6 plants is legal, 7 plants is a misdemeanor, 7 million plants is a misdemeanor, and so we have taken the teeth out of the enforcement. But so then you're down to gun crimes, blah blah blah, now you're down to catching them. It's created a whole different, really a very different game, just because we've done some stupid things regarding laws around this. So, all right, for somebody, we've got like a minute till the next break, and obviously we can talk about it after. But, John, for those people who would say, well, you know, if you just legalized it commercially in the county, then you wouldn't have all these problems. Have you seen a county who has legalized commercial growing and eradicated their black market?
No, not at all. In fact, we haven't had one legitimate county. We haven't had a legitimate regulated cannabis operation that is literally doing it right change the demographic of what's going wrong.
Yeah.
We just haven't done it. And it's not going to happen. And I know not the way things are structured now. We can certainly go into this after the break. But it's not rocket science when you have an incentivized black market for all of these other states. When the cost of cannabis and the oversight and the regulations and the permits and the money a legitimate cannabis farmer has to put up to get regulated versus what the black market guy can do and then sell across state lines and make 5 times the amount of money.
It's
oxymoronic, and the math just isn't adding up to stuff.
No. It's no different than any other crop. If you have somebody out there growing it illegally, the legal farmer can't compete with that. A contractor who's out there trying to make it building houses, and the guy next to him's hiring people under the table and not paying comp insurance. I mean, it's no different.
Mechanics.
You can't compete with illegal labor and on the rest of it. So, it's not gonna make it go away.
When we come back, let's talk about the volume of chemicals you saw up in Siskiyou County, where they could just bring them in on a truck. We shouldn't gloss over that, because they're not in little bottles. Because in your videos, you show like all the carbofuran and that stuff in small like spray bottles and stuff, and maybe half gallon or gallon jugs. But the quantity is much higher, and we also want to hit some of the cleanup you guys do, because you're not just a bunch of warlords running out chasing people around. You guys actually are like Merry Maids on the backside as well, which is pretty,
the most important part of the job.
It's pretty awesome, and I don't know that people know that's going on. We'll be back with our guest, Lieutenant. I was going to call you doctor. You're a doctor now, Dr. John Norris, running Merry Maids with a gun. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
They did a bad, bad thing. 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 You ever loved someone so much you thought your little heart was gonna break in two?
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
We'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
Because that's how it should be. So I guess you'll have to do beer for my dogs. You know, just a little change of pace there. Okay, so the volume of chemicals that you saw, like up in Siskiyou County, in those on the private property grows, were you surprised at all?
Yeah, it was mind blowing. But I got to comment again on your music on the breaks. You guys got some spot on stuff, man. And being in a cover rock band up here, you got these patriotic like Chris Isaak rock songs, everything going. So
I have
kudos to. Your production, it is so spot on.
I have 505 clips that I have spent lots of time building, and I have them all by category. So you are getting songs from my marijuana tab, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. If we do a show on environmentalism, I've got a whole selection there. Yeah, we learned from our first producer. He used to play the music just hit you, and I thought, yeah, it's like the music is its own guest.
It really is, man. Music is magic. But no, I just had to compliment that because of the few breaks we've had.
Hope you like
poisons
it.
And stuff.
Yeah.
In Siskiyou County, I keep in touch, and obviously a lot of my close friends and agency are running the Cannabis Enforcement Program private land teams. And, you know, when they're doing private land search warrants post Prop 64, they're seeing this stuff every day. So it's kind of, oh, yeah, there's more illegal, you know, there's more poisons that are really toxic, and the stuff's in 55-gallon drums. But it had been a minute since I had been on, you know, a private land grow. And in seeing that, especially these transnational Asian cartels,
mm-hmm.
and what they're putting on this weed and what they're doing to the water that's coming in these water truck pumps or these illegal wells, and then what these doughboy recreational pools look like with 4 foot deep of like this green, blue. It reminded me of a Molotov cocktail of poison water that we'd see in one of those check dams out in the forest we talked about earlier.
Oh, yeah. And if anybody wants to see it, actually, the pot tab on our website has all the pictures I've taken out there in those grows. And, the pools, the swimming pools with the greenish-brown slime, it's like, God, definite. And the spray adhesive. Were you surprised about the spray adhesive out there?
I was, and when we were talking, we met Aaron, and I spoke at the town hall after Cameron, and Cameron and I had talked extensively about the spray glue that's going on all this product. And then we were seeing, you know, some of these, like the fitted N95 filtered rebreather, or, you know, basically filtered masks and Tyvek-like hazardous material suits on the properties that were, you know, obviously belong to the growers and have been taken off when they were done spraying this stuff on all of their plants in the hoop houses. And something that really was mind-blowing is when I always think about site assessments when I would go on an outdoor trespass grow with my teammates, like they're still doing, and see, hey, do we have carbofuran in the grow? If we don't see it, are there any visible signs of it on the plant? Does it have the white, splotchy, kind of runny, bird-dropping, liquid paper look, white, misty-type color to the plants, indicating that that stuff's been applied on those plants within probably the last 24 to 48 hours before it kind of dries invisible. Now we know that stuff is ultra-toxic, but at least we're in an open-air environment in the mountains, and we can get upwind and approach a grow site going, you know, going downwind toward the threat. These hoop houses, when they were, when the sheriff's department was, you know, gaining entry and cutting and going in to clear them, they literally had to cut the tops of all these hoop houses and pull back all that heavy plastic layering because the toxic fumes inside those hoop houses were so concentrated. The CO2 levels were so low, there's a suffocation factor in there, and I was back to doing outdoor grow work, but on steroids with the level of concentration of these poisons and how easily you can breathe them in a confined environment. So I made very careful not to go in those confined spaces, make sure that stuff was aerated, and it was every single hoop house that we hit on three particular raids that day. And it was an absolute mess, the amount of chemicals we saw in all of these grows. And again, it seems to be the template, like the Mexican drug cartels have kind of a template of using carbofuran. Even though they know how deadly it is and deadly to their own people, they're still going to use it because they know nothing that crawls, flies, walks, breathes is going to go near that plant. There's a protocol that these transnational groups seem to be doing with the spray glue and with other poisons that we couldn't even identify of how they're applying them. They're wearing PPE, obviously, to get them on there, but it can't be good with them going in and out of those hoop houses daily. And certainly anybody that goes in to raid them or that would stumble across them, there's a huge, you know, environmental crime and a health and human safety factor that's just crazy.
Well, it's interesting that they know how toxic that stuff is because they're wearing the PPE to apply it and work around it. And then they turn around and sell it to the public. There's a real concern there for your customer base.
Well, and the scientist that we've interviewed a few times, he had said that cannabis in all forms, whether it's hemp, CBD, whether you smoke it, vape it, whatever you do, causes cancer. And so we were like, well, yeah, look at all the chemicals. And he's like, no. Even without the chemicals. So I'm thinking, if without the chemicals, it's got a heavy carcinogen factor, imagine with the chemicals.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, it's one of those things you can't overstate. And before we leave the animals, too, I don't know that you would see this necessarily out in those public land grows, but on the private land grows, especially the Asian ones up in Siskiyou County and probably here in Shasta County as well, they're finding that they're skinning and eating dogs. Did you spot any of that while you were up there?
We saw some, and again, these were big surprises to me. When we went up there, and this was not for our particular Call Sign Trailblazer documentary. This was helping out Jorge Ventura and Sognik, the Daily Caller crew that are doing the part two follow-up to Cartelville USA that was done down in the high deserts of L.A. and exposed some of the cartel problems down there. And Jorge and his team and Sognik did an incredible job on that one. But now I immersed with them to not only be part of the documentary, be interviewed for it, but to co-host it with Jorge through a week in Siskiyou. And that was not anything we anticipated seeing was this cruelty to animals issue.
Yep.
It wasn't even on our radar. It wasn't on a radar that I was aware of. I hadn't really talked. My colleagues weren't aware of it back at agency that I was aware of. And certainly the day we were with Siskiyou County Sheriff getting to talk to the old Met Sergeant, a good friend of mine, and getting caught up and finding out that these law enforcement teams are literally rescuing these abandoned, emaciated dogs that are left behind by these, you know, seasonal transnational groups that are jumping all around, growing that cannabis in Siskiyou before they ship it back east for the black market. And we were seeing dogs that were in a rehab center that would just break your heart. You know, they had
tied up with wire and stuff.
They had barbed wire around their snouts. They had actually their genitals cut up with, like, snare wire. Mm-hmm. And that stuff was put on these dogs to keep them under control. I mean, almost a torturous thing. And I just could not fathom why that would be done. But it is very much being done by these illegal growers. They definitely have a thing with bringing the dogs out for protection, maybe between rival properties. And then if that dog isn't working for them effectively or is no longer of use, they either abandon it, abuse it, starve it. I mean,
or eat it.
Really, really ugly stuff. Or eat it.
Yeah.
Or eat it. And you know, I mean, different cultures have different tastes. I'm not trying to disparage anybody.
Yeah,
that.
But we don't eat
the
dogs here.
Line is you,
when in Rome.
You know, and when in Rome. And the other thing we don't do is we don't let animals suffer. Right?
No.
There's a 597 section of the penal code is called cruelty to animals, and it's a felony for a reason. And I have seen countless Mexican drug cartel examples of tortured animals, wild animals. I mean, chapter one of the big murder mystery and taking a cartel kingpin to justice after 15 years in hidden war will go into a crew that this plaza boss patriarch brought in that actually captured a wild bobcat, trucked it in that we watched on surveillance in a cage in the back of a truck with water tanks, and to go do trespass grows straight out of Mexico on some good private ranches right in my backyard in Silicon Valley in the Morgan Hill foothills. And when we went and raided that grow, here's a bobcat skinned out, you know, kind of as a talisman display on a hog wire fence. Obviously killed, obviously maybe tortured. Who would do that?
Yeah.
And that's what we were seeing signs of, Doug, on the other side with what was going on in Siskiyou County with these dogs. And, you know, hey, we're everybody on that film crew, and I can, you know, myself especially, given my love for canines, having dogs my whole life, working with canines to save my life that I value as much as any human partner I've ever worked with, that gets to a game warden's soul and breaks it.
Yeah.
And you just don't do that to your animals. And we saw that up there. And
a lot.
Like said,
I mean, it
no
isn't
a... No exaggeration. A lot of it.
Yeah, it's not... I mean, people think, well, that hardly ever happened. No. You've got, oh, I don't know, 5,000 grows in that one area. And I don't know how many thousands of people running it, but you look at how many animals you can spread over that much territory. Here you are right at the base of Mount Shasta. I mean, the ground's a little rough. I mean, it kind of looks a little bit like the set from Lost in Space because it's that high desert. But you look all around and you think, what the hell? I mean, the chemicals and those swimming pools full of chemicals and all that. You guys do a ton of cleanup. When when you're out on the public lands, part of you guys don't leave the site until you have it all.
Right.
It's very interesting to watch. You have it the big bundles basically airlifted out, but with helicopter. I guess I was going to ask you how long it takes to do that, but I suppose it's different every time. How long do you think it would take to clean up that site up there in Siskiyou County on private land, just based on the cleanups you've done?
Yeah, that was a hot question. And what was going through my mind is when we were embedded with y'all in Siskiyou County, and especially getting to talk to our head DA there at the town hall,
mm-hmm.
and hear from all, and you and I were shoulder to shoulder listening to farmers and ranchers and single mothers outraged at the threats they're getting from armed gunmen, outraged that they're being told, hey, your water is going to disappear, but look the other way, you might not get shot. I mean,
lives on 40,000 acres, and they're not safe from them.
Yeah, and you know, that just can't happen in the United States of America. I'm sorry. It doesn't matter where you're at in our great nation. But the thing about what I was asked, and actually Sheriff LaRue and I had this talk extensively during our day with the sheriff's office, was, you know, how many guys would you need to come in, dedicated as a task force, and clean Siskiyou County up nonstop till you literally got a warrant for every property you needed. You know, you were filling and flowing. You had, you know, if you needed 100 or more officers and you needed infrastructure and support, what would that take? And then the thing I brought up is that you've got to add in reclamation, Sheriff, because, as you know, the environmental damage doesn't end when you just rip the grow site out. And with outdoor trespass grows, if you don't take that infrastructure out, if you don't reclaim the water diversion and spool up all that pipe and get that creek back, a Mexican cartel group is going to come in within a year or two and just go, hey, man, law enforcement's taxed. I already got $40,000 of infrastructure set up. I just got to reestablish my water line, put the grow a quarter mile further down the canyon. And it's maybe 30, 40% chance I'll ever get raided again. But, you know, I got 20 other grows, so if I do lose it, no big thing. Very little cost, benefit analysis equation dictates that I'm going to go ahead and do that investment. Same thing up north, you know.
Yep.
But the thing is, the wells, the diversions, the piping, some of this stuff, most of those are illegal, so that water is going to continue to be depleted. The poison water that's staying on site, when you raid a grow like that and leave, I saw numerous raided private land grows just out of Doris, well before town hall, that had been raided, and all the infrastructure, all the poisons, all the water diversions were sitting right there on a raided site. And there was no funding. Certainly the landowner wasn't going to do it because, obviously, that's a criminal group that's been taken out. They just abandoned it and left the train wreck, the Superfund site, in place. And now we've got that same problem with who's going to clean that up. You've got to factor in that. And something we did when we developed MET, we kind of made a three-pronged approach. We call it the triangle of attack. You're going to apprehend and try to pursue and incarcerate and or prosecute legitimate environmental criminals, whether they're cartels, whether they're just illegal trespass growers, whatever the case may be. That's step one. Step two is you're going to eradicate and destroy a tainted plant that has no value, regardless of where you sit on the cannabis regulation continuum, to go into the market. Legal or illegal, that stuff is poison.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to let that get there. But part three, that is the dirty job, the trash collector job, the one a lot of agencies don't want to do, the one a lot of our traditional administrators used to say, dude, we are not trash collectors. Why are you out there on a grow trying to coordinate a cleanup? I said, well, last time I checked, we're sworn to protect the resources and the waterways of California, and we're leaving that stuff out there. So whether it looks like we're collecting trash or not, we have to do that, or we've done nothing effective in the first two parts of that mission.
Yeah, and well, it stands itself up again pretty quickly. But the other thing is, and you guys detailed it in one of the videos, that the animals fall into like those water pits with the visqueen. They fall in there, yep, and drown and die, and all sorts of. I mean, it just basically becomes a wildlife killer, and so you've left a giant killing machine out in the woods. It just, there's no upside to this stuff. That I guess is the one thing. But, yes, we thought it was really interesting how you guys fly over it, pick the locations, and I just thought, you know, everywhere you go out there, you evil drug growing people, you should know these guys are watching because you guys are getting better at it all the time. We got to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Lieutenant John Norris. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
For good.
Okay, that's the best theme song. You can steal that one.
That works well.
Yeah, that's it. That's actually one of my favorites. If it was up to me, I'd play it like all the breaks. So we got the chemicals, we got the dogs, we got the booby traps, lots of booby traps. I mean, booby traps like they saw in Vietnam. Out on these public land grows.
Vietnam era, yep. That one was, and the one I showed the picture of that is in the documentary, it's in the book teaser video that I showed at Town Hall, but it's, there's also pictures of it in the book, is because, you know, we've seen a handful of anti-personnel booby traps in primarily, you know, the Mexican drug cartel outdoor trespass grow operations, but to be that anti-personnel specific and that deadly, we're using, you know, a punji pit from the Vietnam era where the Viet Cong dig that hole, put those sharpened bamboo sticks and put the human excrement on the sharpened tips to, you know, just amaze, you know, just eviscerate our soldiers' legs and get some infection going. That was a real eye-opener. And Phoebe actually detected that one. That was in Whiskeytown National Park in South County, of all places, not far from you guys. And it wasn't even at a grow site. I mean, it was in a grow area on the way to a grow site on a big trail. And our, you know, one of our sheriff's department sniper point men would have walked right into that thing had Phoebe not done an alert and detected that it was under the tarp and the leaf litter and something we were going to walk into. But that was one of several we found throughout the state over the years, especially with the cartel crew. They're just a little more egregious, a little more dangerous, and something the public definitely needs to be looking out for, because that stuff is covered. It looks like the ground, and next thing you know, the ground is a disguised tarp, and you're falling into one of those pits, Aaron, like you mentioned, deer doing in these big, deep holes during the winter of the big trash pits and check dam holes that are in these grow sites. But now this one is specific, with sharpened sticks on the bottom that might have the, you know, banned carbofuran on them, like we found in that one in particular.
What about the human trafficking and all that side of it? Because we haven't actually brought any of that up. I know there's lots of weapons trafficking and chemicals and all that, but there's a huge element of human trafficking with this as well.
There absolutely is, and I'm glad you brought that up. Something I'm really highlighting, and I touched on this in Hidmore, and I'm going to do it in the next publication more extensively, is we want to remember that these criminal groups we're dealing with are not just doing illegal, unregulated, and toxically tainted cannabis for the black market. They are involved in human trafficking rings, the Mexican cartels for sure, the transnational Asian groups. There's signs of human trafficking going on with the people that are embedded in some of these grows in California. We're seeing the human trafficking element of bringing in forced labor for the indoor and private land Mexican cartel grows all over the state. We're also seeing these groups involved in the child sex trafficking that's such a big hotbed topic. Now, finally, it's getting the attention it deserves, and it kind of has the country outraged, but these criminal groups are involved in that. They're also involved in fentanyl production, whether they're being made in dirty labs down in Mexico or they're being made in clandestine cartel labs here in the U.S. This fentanyl is killing tens, if not more, thousands of people, especially our youth. The counterfeit prescription opioid drugs, as Bill Bodner, the sack out of DEA office Los Angeles, who was on our Thin Green Line podcast shortly after COVID dropped, was really candid in talking about the new trends of how these cartels are diversifying in their criminal enterprise and their business model. And cannabis is a very significant part of it from the standpoint of environmental damage and health and human safety, and something we're most connected to because of the environmental component. But that's only a drop in the bucket of all the crimes these groups are doing, and they're doing it throughout America and embedded and very comfortable doing it. And it kind of, folks, extends into another issue of the issues at the border, an unprotected border, Title 42, all these different things that these press crews are covering right now that we're seeing.
Yeah.
What is that doing for an influx of the criminal element into our nation? Outside of legitimate immigration, outside of chasing the American dream, we're not against that. It's apples and oranges. But we are getting the percentage of deportable felons on watch lists nationally, people off this terrorism watch list, known active terrorists, walking right into America, whether they're walking across an open border or they're being dropped off by a panga boat that's hitting the West Coast now. Thousands and thousands of panga interdictions as far as the number of people coming in on pangas now and just immersing into America. And who are they? You know, what level of criminality do they have? What level of destruction and threat to our American public are these folks engendering? And it's something we really got to look at is the big picture, what these groups are doing.
How, you know, you mentioned COVID. What effect has COVID had on the whole illegal grow situation? Has it made it more prevalent, do you think?
Well, they all stayed home with masks on, I think. Pretty sure. The cartel, yeah, the cartel guys were very concerned about their safety.
Yeah. That's a great question, because it's one very few people ask, because during COVID and during riots and protests and statues falling over, you know, our country, we kind of lost sight of, you know, what's our embedded evil doing now mm-hmm. that we have a culture of chaos. And the cartels went nuts. I remember on the COVID lockdown, I'm in California part-time, but I remember leaving California thinking when there was potential border closures and the National Guard were running into every state and, you know, the panic was starting. I made the decision to migrate possibly permanently to Montana, not knowing if I'd ever go back to Cali, and made the jaunt back here to Montana, my new home state, and just kind of hovered and prepared. That's when we launched our second podcast to go along with our Warden's Watch podcast, Wayne Saunders, a retired lieutenant in New Hampshire. We started the Thin Green Line podcast to tell something other than just game warden stories, especially through COVID. Survival preparedness. What's going to happen to our resources? You know, are people going to, with a food chain and a supply chain possibly going away, are we going to suddenly see an influx of poaching and taking wildlife animals just so people can eat? And what we noticed with the cartels, and talking to my old teammates and the team leader that replaced me, is it was told to me this way. When we started our pilot program that I talked about in Hidden War, Operation Pristine, the test pilot 3-month program to decide if the chiefs were going to have us go full-time as a MET unit in early 2014, we worked 7 days a week for a month and a half straight through August of 2013 with the military. And we started to document our findings as far as plants and water diversions and weapons and people and bad guys, all those stats that, Aaron, you had asked where to find some of those stats from that time period. Inside letter jacket, when you open the book, it's all right there. And that's just our team from a 6-year period. Well, wow. As crazy as it was during the pilot program when we went full time on this and just took the gloves off and went deep into the rabbit hole, COVID year was that again. Our team was overwhelmed.
Wow.
They were basically on protocol not to go do grows until they figured out what the magnitude of the COVID threat was. So they were basically, you know, hamstrung, as were the federal LEOs on the Forest Service side.
Oh, that's right, because the state got super paranoid pretty early on.
They sure did. And so the first half of summer, MET missions were not happening. And you can imagine what my old teammates, what my brothers were doing. They were fit to be tied.
Yeah.
And finally, about midsummer, when they went out and they started to work these grows, it was the Wild West. It was missions every day. And it was told to me, like, hey, John, it's just like when you started the team back in 2013. It's been relentless. Because, again, long-windedly, cartels operate in a culture of chaos. It's a mindset, and they thrive on it. They need it. They need chaos. They need confusion. They need lawlessness. They need the Wild West, and that's how they're effective, right? Mm. That's how they're effective, because they know there's not any structured emphasis on curtailing their activity when these other hotbed items come up, like race riots or, you know, woke demonstrations, statues falling down, deaths and, you know, medical hospital escorts that we were all tied up to. So it was very, very busy, very busy. And it continued, you know, and there's been a steady presence. We've certainly got back to doing the work of the yesteryear, if you will, and MET teams are out there doing their job again. But with the private land influx of how many tens, if not hundreds of thousands of illegal grows we have in California on the private land side, and then having to deal with the public outdoor grows as well, and combine those with very little resources, you guys know we're fighting an uphill battle, and all the support we get, like everything you guys are doing in such a good realm, and I'm so grateful not only to discuss it, but the efforts you're both doing outside of just the radio show is commendable, because we got to keep spreading the message and wake people up. This is just, I didn't title the book Hidden War with our publishers for nothing. It literally outrages everybody when they hear about it, and then I find people all over the country that look at me and go, oh my gosh, Lieutenant, we have cartels in America. There's poison on marijuana. I thought marijuana was legal. There's
I thought it was good for you.
There's a dispensary.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's the thing. And so for people who don't, maybe they don't use public land, maybe they don't live in a rural area. I mean, like, take away all the things. You should still care that these people are trafficking humans, bringing in chemicals, killing and eating dogs, ruining our wildlife. But, hey, the beauty is you get to pay for all of it.
Yep. Well, speaking of animals, just want to mention one more thing. The picture that you had in there of the dead mother bear
under the
tree,
yeah,
and her cub up the tree
dead.
From poison water. That just made me sick. And, you know, the scale, I mean, that just kind of tells you what's happening to our wildlife out there.
And it really puts it in perspective. And the reason I included those pictures was not only to set a very, very, you know, harsh statement, but, you know, we have a mixed bag of people in America that are conservationists and believe in ethical and legal hunting and, you know, feel the table of the meat you harvest and honoring the animal. But then in the same breath, an animal preservationist or anti-hunter animal rights activist would say, how can you be an advocate of wildlife and you kill animals? Well, you are an advocate of wildlife when you kill animals under the conservation model because you're putting all those funds into protecting all these species, right? But we agree to disagree, but the bottom line is, the one thing about this issue is it absolutely walks the line between both sides of ideology, left, right, liberal, conservative, pro-cannabis, anti-cannabis, hunter, non-hunter, preservationist, conservationist. It doesn't matter. Nobody wants to see animals killed that way, a poison death, a nerve agent working on their body, a very painful, drawn out, you know, way for an animal to die. And now that meat is tainted. It will never be used. It will never be gobbled up by Mother Nature in the predatory conservation cycle, or by a hunter that would feed a family, or, you know, in Africa, let's say, an entire village for 3 months from that animal being harvested. And that is a absolutely inhumane, sick way to see animals expire is from poisons like that. And when you have that baby cub or you have that unborn fawn still, you know, that fetus, if you will, and that's a graphic picture we put up.
Yeah.
I have a lot of, you know, animal rights groups I've presented to that are just outraged. And
they should be.
I've gone to, when Prop 64 is about to drop, and I talk about this in the last chapter, because it was mind-blowing for me to go to previously unregulated cannabis growers that were in the black market and on the smuggler's run, if you will, and have 500 to 600 of them at a California Growers Association meeting town hall. And I'm on a panel to be one of the first law enforcement guys to show a PowerPoint and discuss issues out there that we're concerned with and not work them. And to have so many of those growers that say, okay, I've done it wrong. I want to do it right. I want to get regulated. I've never been about, you know, poisoning wildlife. I love my deer, blah, blah, blah. And they see those pictures and I got people bawling their eyes out in the audience.
Yeah.
You know, grower groups, animal rights groups. I've had hunter groups, I mean, fit to be tied, like they're going to shoot the windows out. I mean,
well, and then you go up to Siskiyou County, and the first thing you notice is there is no wildlife in that area. Gee, I wonder where it went.
Exactly. Yeah.
You don't even see squirrels out there. Nothing.
Which, you know, Aaron, is complete blasphemy, because that is one of the most pristine, wide-open habitat, water enriched areas of California, where you should see mule deer,
predators, raptors. I used to get complaints all the time. People were super pissed off because the elk were ruining everything. And it's like, oh, I'm sorry, what elk? They were up by Doris. They're kind of MIA now. John, we have come to the end of our rope here, and we really appreciate you squirreling away this.
Yeah, 2 hours goes fast.
Yeah, we appreciate you squirreling away this much time for us. It's been super, super informative, and I look forward to crossing paths with you again. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks so much for having me on and all the good work you're doing, and anything I can do to help. We're all part of the Thin Green Line Together for America, not just California, and I'm glad to help, and I look forward to working with you guys some more.
Outstanding. You can find the commercial-free recording of this at wethepeopleradio.us.